This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 406, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. I got this feeling on the summer day when you were gone. I crashed my car into the bridge. I watched, I let it burn. I threw your shit into a bag and pushed it down the stairs.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 406.
Welcome to the Island of Misfit Toys.
My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And the strangely bearded Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. We call that the Pick of the Week.
Wish I'd done that.
We also talk about other books on the podcast, other books of the week, other topics of interest, emails and voicemails and all kinds of fun and goofy nonsense. Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning. It's a spoiler-filled show. So if you haven't read the books, come back. Pause the show.
It's a lady.
Everyone will be happier. We'll try not to spoil Breaking Bad, even though there's an email about it. Paul, you had the pick.
Yes, I did. And I chose, and one of the things we're doing, we're saying it on the Twitter feed. So if you don't want to wait until Sunday, hopefully we'll say it earlier on the Twitters and the Facebook.
Yes, some of you emailed in about it, and I think we talked about doing it originally, but we just sort of forgot, was that we're going to announce the pick when it's made on our social media so that you can follow along at home and be ready. Some people, you know, if it's a surprise pick, then they don't have the book with them. So
are we going to start complaining about our lack of free time on social media as well?
Maybe. No. I thought we do that. Okay. Don't we do that already?
That's what I've been using the account for almost exclusively.
And if you don't want to know until Sunday, if you want to forego that and enjoy the autoerotic asphyxiation kind of pleasure of not knowing and then knowing on Sunday, delaying that gratification, yeah, you can just wait. You can just avoid Twitter entirely. So pick this week. Pick. Exactly.
I'm going to forego social media for 4 days a week.
There are people out there.
Yeah.
Diehard fan. We love those guys.
Yeah.
All new X-Men special number one by Mike Costa and Chris Anka. This I had no idea. I had no idea this was going to be a thing. This was coming out. This was a nice, pleasant surprise. I saw it, up on Comixology. I said, "What do I read first? This or All New X-Men number 17?" And I was like, "I'll read All New X-Men 17. This looks like it's unrelated," and I was right. And this is a thing. This sort of, remember that All New X-Men issue a little while before Battle of the Atom? It was a La Fuente issue, mm-hmm. and it was all about Jean and yes. And Hank, and you know, hanging out in the garage, and the smooching, right? And the look of absolute horror on Scott Summers' face on the cover. Make best covers of the week.
Yeah.
Always nice. This feels like it. If you need it to fit somewhere, I think it fits right after that issue. And sort of before Battle of the Atom.
Right.
Also, tonally, it fits in there because it refers back to that. And this is the original X-Men Unstuck in Time, or Stuck in Time, however that phrase works. And they're in the modern day. and they're wandering around in Manhattan. And I think it's kind of interesting that they're kind of overwhelmed by the hustle and bustle of Times Square. But wasn't Times Square always like that?
Yes.
And like, wouldn't it
more
have
hookers?
But I guess the thing is really that they're unused to people.
They should have been surprised to not be stabbed or robbed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Should have been.
Well, they're still very vague about when they're actually from.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. 60s, 80s. Early 90s, they should have been surprised. They
it wouldn't have been giant TV screens.
Immediately
but
robbed.
They would have been there. I mean, when did those big screens go up? In the 90s, at least,
yeah,
right?
But it's yeah. like a, but it's like a floating 15 years ago, would you say? Like, that's the age difference,
seems,
maybe?
Seems 15, 20 feels
15,
right.
20, something in there.
Either way, these people are having a much harder time with their time travel than the guy in Sleepy Hollow is, and that was 250 years. That's enough of my passive-aggressive rant about that show. Continue.
It's season two, yay! But they're you know, like, I can't believe people are just talking about anything on the phone right there in public.
Well, I think you would. It is that would be shocking to
sure,
see
if yes.
you walk. Everyone's glued to a screen on, you know, and no one's, you know, looking at each other, which is weird. But
yeah, and that's sort of just like a subplot for Scott and Gene, because Scott's like, now I know what it feels like to be you with all the, you know, the stuff going on in your head and you can't really, you know, block it out. And they're going to go to the movies. They're going to see a movie and hopefully people will be quiet. And I was like, not in 2013 are people going to be quiet in the movie theater. So that plan might not work out for you. But ultimately, this is a big showcase.
On Times Square.
No, this is a big showcase for Hank and that lovable lug. Big gorilla-shaped dude with a heart of gold and a love for Anne Sexton and Sylvia Plath and stuff. And what I like about this issue ultimately is that it feels like a great relationship comic, but then it's also got some really nice action in it. There's a great action sequence when an older version of Dr. Octopus with his Elton John hair comes out of the past.
Sweet green pajamas.
Exactly, and is wreaking havoc on the city and this research center, and then the superior Spider-Man shows up with the modern Dr. Octopus in there. Of course, only he's the only one who knows about that, and he fights alongside the kids, and there's some wonderful banter between them, and some wonderful use of all their powers together, and it shows that Dr. Octopus is pretty smart, and this is the first installment of a series of specials. I don't know what all of the books involved are, but it's about this anachronistic Dr. Octopus from the past just causing some destruction in the modern day. And I just thought this was just really refreshing and fun and light and effervescent, and I enjoyed it. And it was just a surprise because I didn't know to expect this, and I opened it up and it's, you know, think of all new X-Men as it's a Bendis thing, and this was not Bendis, but I think it was a very good use of these characters, which when we first heard about it, you know, that's kind of a weird idea. They're going to bring the original X-Men forward and
they're going to be around forever.
Right. And they're doing some really cool stuff with them.
I could watch Chris Anka's old Dr. Octopus.
Yes.
Forever.
Yeah.
Just fat, spitting mad, angry haircut, like just the rage sort of comes through. It just looks like having a lot of fun.
Chipmunk
with
cheeks.
Just having a ton of fun with the pencils on it.
Mm-hmm.
When Spider-Man showed up, I was like, is that Miles? What's going on with that outfit? Is that a thing?
That's the new superior Spider-Man.
Yeah. I haven't.
In the past couple of months, he's got a new costume.
Doc Ock.
Yeah. I get that. And even like sort of the back is reminiscent of that. I guess mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Yeah, at first I was like, did Mike Costa not get the, you know, the memo on Dr. Octopus being dead and being inside? But that's part of the story, is that this is an anachronistic Dr. Octopus and you know.
It's more time traveling stuff that's been going on.
I like that. I think that time travel rift in the Marvel Universe going through everything is a great low-key way to tie everything together.
Exactly.
It's not a banner across the top. It's not buy all the issues that have everything to do with it. It's just a thing. And this probably will be a thing that, you know, some sort of mini-series or crossover, but, you know, they'll have earned it.
Mm-hmm. And you can really overdo the, you know, oh my stars and garters thing, but the reaction shot of Hank with the oh my stars and garters when he's talking up this girl quite wonderful. I think the Chris Anka art is a big part of this, and seeing Hank bounding around and the extreme anatomy is, I thought, was really great. And able to do some really expressive, like, you know, teens hanging out talking to each other, and as well as these fights. And I think it's a whole package.
Yeah, you're right. It did feel very much sort of like an indie romance comic, you know, even though you had old school Marvel characters in it. It had a very different tone.
Yeah,
which was fun.
So often when they do, you know, play to, you know, Marvel's roots in romance comics, relationship stuff from years and years and years and years and years ago, it's as a pastiche. Mm-hmm. It's as, we're going to make this retro, and we're going to make it we're really going to Millie the model it up,
right?
Or Archie it up. And this was just, they played it straight. This is what this is. This is a story about teens and hormones, and without going, you know, overboard. But
the cover is kind of misleading.
Yes. It is.
I mean, like, if you looked at that cover and you're like, sweet, you bought that, you brought it home, you're like, what is this crap? You know, like, there's got to be dudes out there who did that. I don't care, but it really doesn't, like, just looking at the cover doesn't give you any clue as to what's going on in there.
Actually, if you hadn't made it a pick, I wouldn't have read it, you know, just based on that. I mean, I love the characters, and I'm enjoying their time in the X-Men books, but I would have just stuck to the main one.
This was a situation where, you know, I have the pick this week. I think you'll probably agree with me. I'll get a little bit more adventurous when it's, you know, my week, and I'll look around a little bit more than I might otherwise. And so I was like, I've really been, you know, loving these characters, and, you know, maybe this isn't a Battle of the Atom thing. And it turns out, you know, Battle of the Atom, that, you know, All New X-Men number 17, that was the pick until I read this. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great cast of characters, and both of these writers did really well with them this week.
Well, let's talk about that issue, which was the, what chapter is it here?
Oh God, 6, 5?
I'm trying to scroll to the front.
Okay, sorry, I don't have it in front of me.
Chapter 6.
There you go.
Battle of the Atom, Bendis and Eminem. I'm still loving the story. I love the flash forwards, the flashbacks. I love all the crazy time travel. I love that there's another
President Dazzler,
another group of X-Men from the future. It just gets, and you want to say wacky because that's not really the tone of it, but it is funny. But I do love that they just keep piling on the teams.
That's sort of the thing, is that I should have expected it, but it's like a further wrinkle in time that it's not just about the group of the X-Men from the past, the all-new X-Men, and then the modern X-Men, which is, you know, the Wolverine and Cyclops on either side of that schism, and then the future X-Men involving the Lady Zorn, yep. Which is actually not modern.
So it's past Jean Grey, aged in the future. It's weird.
Yeah. How they described? I think they described it in Jason Aaron's book last week, where it's like, it's old young Jean or something.
Old
like
young
that.
Jean,
So and that's kind of fun. But now we have this other group, and it's like, we're the real future X-Men, and you've got Jubilee going by the name Wolverine.
Yeah.
You've got Colossus.
There's a line for that. That makes sense.
Colossus has sweet mustache.
Sweet mustache. That's literally the only comment I had about this book. And I don't mean to be reductive about it, but the only thing I came out of it, I was like, you know, Iceman's rad, but Colossus is sweet with that mustache.
The Motorhead mustache.
End of story.
I'm
done. I'm out. Tell me when you're done.
Come on. Iceman is a wizard. Bobby. That's pretty cool.
I do like the constant variations in Iceman and how much it freaks out the young one, young past Iceman, is that every time he turns around, there's a different version of him.
So the original future Iceman was like, they keep calling it like the Ice Hulk.
Yeah, so you got Ice Gandalf and Ice Hulk. And Ice Gandalf is the real Iceman. It confirms our suspicion that Ice Hulk is basically one of those constructs that he can apparently create now, and sort of aged or
sort of like sentient. Like a golem of himself, of his own powers,
right? Which he's been doing over in the Wolverine and X-Men book. So they're really playing really well in continuity and with the crazy time travel aspects of it, and they're making it lots of fun. And I'm really enjoying the heck out of everything happening.
What do you think young Iceman thinks of that sweet mustache?
He probably wants to grow one.
He probably does.
Probably
but he
too young for it. So.
It probably inspires him to grow his wizard mustache and beard later on.
Although, if you were Iceman, couldn't you create some sort of ice-based mustache attached to your face?
I bet there's a there's
it'd be
sort
snow.
Of,
I think.
Yeah.
There's a way that doesn't work. It's right. just it's not completely foolproof. Then you need to earn that mustache, and then biology, nature knows.
I really kind of want to shave my face into that mustache.
Do you think I tried it once.
Is it a situation where, do you think Colossus could ever get rid of that because it's like metal now?
Well, when he goes into the non-metal form, he just shaves. It's kind of like,
I guess so.
He's like the opposite of Red Hulk, whereas when General Thunderbolt Ross turns into Red Hulk, he loses the mustache. Colossus says, fuck that. We keep it in Russia. We keep our mustaches.
I'm just thinking back on that Red Hulk page, and it was Hardman, right?
Yes.
And they were showing like there's like a panel missing.
Yeah.
I can't help but think we had a little something to do with that in some small way.
Yeah.
I think it was somewhere the general outcry about the mustache was just sort of...
Yeah, but I want to take credit.
Okay, go ahead. I like all the different versions of Beast. I like the different versions of Iceman. I just like that everybody's colliding in this giant sort of royal rumble of time travelers. And it's fun. I always enjoy time traveling stories. And the good... They're not taking it too crazily serious. You know, I think they're acknowledging the sort of goofy aspect of having all these different teams together. And so I think that's what makes it so enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is going to be a controversial statement, but I'm going to make it.
Uh-oh.
I want Greg Rucka to stop doing Lazarus, despite what Josh, you know, threatening everyone's life for, so that he can write the novel of the backstory. Because
I'll allow it.
The backstory in they're talking about Lazarus number 4, and the backstory he puts into the letters column where he, you know, describes how the world got to this point is utterly fascinating to me, and I want to read that story. I want to read the prose novel version of it. I don't want to read the comic version. I want the deep prose novel version of that.
It's going to exist, and you know it is.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way he doesn't do it.
I need him to do it. I love the comic. I'm really enjoying it, but I just get so excited to read the next part of that history because it's sort of like it's in his wheelhouse and my wheelhouse. You know, it's just sort of the alternate history, science, and politics, and the world crumbling. And
yeah,
you know what I like about this book is that for years all we've heard is that comic people come up with stuff, but it's mainly so they can get movies made out of them.
Yeah.
If that is Rucka and Lark's goal, boy, they're going about it all wrong. I mean, it's just not. I was like, this is not. It's just too much. It's not translatable. Like, it's if anything, he's making a comic, and eventually he's gonna be like, I need to write this as a novel.
Right.
It's gonna be what
happens. Did you see it as like a TV series?
Yeah, you could do it as a TV series.
Yeah,
I
guess.
Yeah, you totally could.
I got high minded.
But no, I just want that Queen and Country novel backstory. I want it for this. I want it badly.
No, I think you're right on there. It almost feels like not to be reductive about this one. It's that it feels like this is almost the webisodes of the backup stuff. Like the main feature in the comic is like it almost feels incidental to everything that's going on and just how robust that world building is that he's at least alluding to in the backup.
Yeah, which is great,
and I'm still enjoying it. But that's not knocking the comic. That's praising the backstory.
Built into it. It's a really interesting world. It's one of those slightly plausible worlds, like the Michael Crichton kind of thing, where he would take something real and sort just twist it a little bit, and then he would put all the backstory in the front, trying to convince you that it was real, and it was that kind of thing. And I really do like that in my sort of speculative science fiction in the make it feel very real, and this feels very like it could happen. And then he also puts the real, news in the back there too, which freaks you the fuck out if you read. And which makes
some good ideas back there. Some things I think we should try and implement
no.
in the next few years. It's really a shame about the shutdown, man. A lot of that stuff putting on the back burner.
But anyway, this is. I mean, I think Lark's doing fantastic work here. I showed this to somebody the other day, and they said, "Wow, it's kind of a different, rougher Michael Lark," which I do kind of like.
Yeah,
I think the book's fantastically gorgeous, and I do think that he's playing a long game. Clearly, Rucka is on the story. It's not not in a bad way at all, but he's really sort of building this step by step in a very interesting way.
Well, he basically guaranteed like 60 issues or something like that, didn't he? Or that's the plan as far as it's up to him.
One would hope. We'll get that way, but I do like it. Lots of intrigue, lots of interesting dynamics going on, and he claims to have never read or seen Game of Thrones, so.
yeah.
There you go. But I did like it a lot, quite a bit. I want a novel.
About 1,000 short comics came out this week.
Yep. Yeah.
In the form of 3 anthologies. Which one do you want to talk about first?
You talk about The Witching Hour because I didn't get to read this one.
Okay, The Witching Hour is from Vertigo, and this feels like sort of classic Vertigo stomping grounds. It's a lot of sort of ghost story kind of things. And
last time we had science fiction, right? The last anthology was the time travel one.
That's right, the time travel one, and we get part 3 of the Boy Detectives thing, the Dead Boy Detectives, which is going to be a series in December. That's by Mark Buckingham, Toby Litt. My favorites in here. There's some Aless Kot. It's very good. About a witch in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. There is, and in modern Afghanistan and the war and everything. There's a great story in here by Matthew Sturgis, artist Sean McManus. And it's if Arthur Miller and Marilyn Monroe lived in a world where the occult was, you know, real, like where magic was real, but it was frowned upon. And then they created a spell to stop magic from existing. And in that vacuum, the Blacklist and all of those witch hunts form. And so I think a really fun way to look back at that period, which is always fascinating.
There's a Cliff Chang story in here?
There is a Cliff Chang story in here.
My new favorite artist name is in this. Gerhard Human.
That's a cool name.
That's like a homunculus name. It's
Gerhard Human. Has rocketed up the Wade Von Grobadger
Memorial
Charts.
That's
kind of
name that like an alien picks for himself to try to blend in.
Yeah.
You know, like the Coneheads. We are Gerhard Human. Do not mind us. We are human.
Exactly.
It's an awesome name. I don't think I'm thinking.
Cliff Chang and writer Brett Lewis did a story called Mars to Stay, and it's about a reality show set in space, and it's actually perfect timing for this with the shutdown because they just said, we got this reality show, and you guys are up on Mars, and even though we've got all the sponsors and everything, we have no funding anymore. So good luck to you guys up there. We're turning off the cameras. Enjoy yourselves, and it's the slow descent of what happens when, you know, Earth abandons the colony on Mars. There's a story called Daniel by Steve Beach, Words and Art. And it is about an older man who has been in the closet for a very long time. And he befriends some adolescent witches. And they give him the strength through a seance with his former lover who was killed because he was gay, for him to finally embrace what he is and go out there and get out of this little town and live his life.
So on the whole, would you say this was a successful anthology?
This was a successful anthology. That time travel one was really good,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it was.
No one's beat that. But
no
the rest
one's
of the
beat
thing,
that. But
the rest of that issue wasn't as strong. So maybe on the whole, this looks like a good. The names in it aren't as familiar as some of the other ones.
Well, there's also a really cool little story, a Kelly Sue DeConnick story with Ming Doyle on art, and they do some really great things with, and it's Jordy Belair on colors, I should have known, great colors with like these subdued blues and really super saturated like red oranges, and it's about a woman who has a spider like crawled into her ear and then got into her brain.
Stop talking.
So anyways,
no more.
Some great stuff in time for Halloween. I really enjoyed that one.
The CBLDF Liberty Annual came out this week. It's one of those CBLDF fundraiser books that gets rotated through the publishers. This year was Image Comics, and I liked it. The problem with this annual is the one I have every year is that it gets kind of knock you over the heady.
Yes.
You know, it gets a little repetitive. I mean, it's all good. It's good information. It's all good messages. It's all about, you know, free speech and First Amendment rights, and no one is going to say that's bad, but it does get a little repetitive.
And no one reading it is like, why didn't I ever thought about this?
Right.
Does Scott Alley always edit these? I thought that was interesting because, you know, it's Image. And
I feel like, see, the thing is, I guess they rotate, but who else has ever done it besides Image and Dark Horse?
Yeah, okay.
I think the two of them rotate it. But
so, yeah, there's a lot of, knock over the head. This is, you know, censorship is horrible, which it is, but some of the stronger ones. There's a Gabe Hardman, Karina Becko story, The Shoot, and it's about patent riders.
Yeah, the thugs that Edison was sent out to shut down the movie shoots. Yeah,
and it's got Gabe Hardman drawing horses, which is always a good thing.
I like the Corbin story. This is a horror story about the DA trying to shut down a cartoonist. Not many more stood out to me. I mean, it was good. There was all those quality stuff in there.
Towards the end. What was that one? I like the one. It's Josh Williamson, mm-hmm. and it's a very cute one. And it's about it says what if Wortham was right, and it's
that one, yeah.
A couple of little kids in the woods, and their hobby is finding Playboys and going through them and saying, "Are those real? Are those real? I don't think those are real. I can see the scars." But then they find comic books. And it's like they've never heard of Superman before, and they're finally reading about Superman. And the parents flip out when they discover that their kids are reading comics. And the kids goes on a rampage and starts killing everybody.
Rampage. Yeah. No, that was good. I mean, there's a couple of them I find myself just sort of flipping through towards the end once I got to the...
Hack Slash one was pretty funny, and it's a neat concept, at least, in that it's about all those redacted, like the black bars and stuff, and so there's black bars over naughty bits, and black bars over naughty words, and I guess the villain is all about redacting things, and so the Hack Slash crew have to go after him. But yeah, it's all in service to that concept of freedom of speech, and it's a little over the top, a little on the nose.
Yeah. We also had Batman and Black and White number 2, which for me was all about the entirely creepy Raphael Grampa Joker story.
God, yeah.
Which, I mean, the way he drew it, the Joker was the Joker of your nightmares. And it took me a couple of panels to realize that the big mouth was painted on his face and he had a little mouth in the middle of it, which somehow made it even creepier.
Yeah.
Like, if you just had a giant tooth-filled mouth, that's one thing. But then the little tiny mouth in the middle made it just weird and creepy.
Well, it's like regular mouths or regular clowns, right?
Right, but it just made it weirder. I liked that one a lot. It's good.
We don't see Raphael Grampa nearly enough. Like, he always pops up, and it's like a sketch.
I don't understand why he's not a superstar. Other than, I don't know. He should be. It should be like a big deal.
Yeah.
Every time he draws a thing.
Yeah.
I've spoken.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good. I thought the first one was stronger, obviously, it was Pick of the Week, but this was also still pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this anthology. It's a quick break to remind you how you can help the show if you are listening and a fan and want to find out how you can help us continue to go on. You can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. This is the first method. Make all your Amazon purchases through that link. Just copy that and paste it into your toolbar or wherever you go to Amazon and never think about it again. We get a little piece of the sale you make through Amazon, which is slowly subsuming our entire lives. Someone was just talking today about buying groceries through them, and soon they'll just be feeding us intravenously through Amazon tubes. And then the other way you can help us is memberships. We have reinstituted the membership program, which we brought back a couple weeks ago. We've been neglecting to mention it. Go to ifanboy.com, and there's a little button on the toolbar that says support the iFanboy, and you can sign up for a membership, $3 a month or $30 a year. We dropped the price down. And you can help us out that way, too. That's a really great way to help us directly, help us pay for all the stuff we got to pay for and keep the lights on. And we really appreciate everyone who has taken either method to help us out. We couldn't do without you. So now, Savage Wolverine number 9, another book I wasn't going to pick up until Paul informed me that it was a book written and drawn by Jock.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from him, actually. Is his debut as a writer-artist, I think. And yeah, so this Savage Wolverine is sort of turning into the Avenging Spider-Man of Wolverine books?
Yeah.
It's always been that way. It's the Dark Knight story.
What's the Daredevil one called?
Dark Knights?
Yeah, I said it out loud, and I was like, that doesn't sound right.
Right, yeah. I always second-guess myself whenever I see it. I was like, no, that's another character. Anyways, Jock writing and drawing, and I love that he just throws you right into it. I don't know how long this story is. It definitely carries over into next month, but I don't know how much longer after that. But it's Wolverine is like going into free fall from a satellite onto an alien planet. And I was like, is this like Planet Wolverine or something like that? And he meets a kid down there who is like him in certain ways. I don't entirely know where it's going, but
I think it's him.
You think it's him?
Yeah, I think there's a time travel space thing going on. I don't know. I'm probably wrong. It was a good story is what I'm saying.
I mean, if you want to see Wolverine like free falling through the atmosphere onto a planet, it's pretty fun.
Giant bug thing.
And I like that it's like, this takes place whenever. I don't care. It's just, this is Wolverine. This is an adventure he goes on. I'm into it.
Jock, would you like to tell a Wolverine story? Yes, I would. There it is. And he took it to a new place. So, yeah.
Earth 216 was one of the few comics this week that truly shocked me. Paul, are you still reading it or is it just me at this point?
I read this one because you mentioned it.
Oh, so. They've had the war. They've been having the war with the exiled Apocalyptians, or however you call them, on Earth 2, and this was the sort of
Apocalutions.
This was the climax of the battle, in which all hope seems lost as Steppenwolf has destroyed everyone, and then suddenly one of his own turns on him and splits him in half with his hand, which literally made me gasp when I turned the page and saw that full page shot of him getting sliced in two. Only to be revealed that it's apparently Superman in disguise. It was very shocking and bizarre, and made me sad that James Robinson's leaving, because I really do enjoy all these characters in this book. Although there was a group shot at one point, and I didn't really recognize all of the people in the group shot. There was like I recognized the main superheroes, but there was a couple that were wearing just like sort of battle fatigues, and I didn't know who they were. But I really do. I'm enjoying this, and it's gonna be sad when the new. I'm looking forward to the new writer, and only to see what he brings. But I'm sad that.
Do you know how many more Robinson has?
One maybe.
Okay.
So it's not very
much. That makes me really like tentative, because we read the first couple of installments of that Injustice book.
You did, yes.
Okay, I did and reported on them.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of just for yucks.
Yeah. I'm going to give him a couple to see what he brings, but I'm going to be sad to not get the culmination of what Robinson had planned. That's too bad. Hunger. You guys,
yeah, Hunger
you
number
jumped
three.
On the Hunger train?
Yeah, I have been for a while, but I feel like it's been a little while since this came out.
Yeah.
But this is the Joshua Hale Fiakov, Leonard Kirk story of Galactus.
And Galactus.
A couple of versions of Galactus that have merged to become as one, and they come to the Ultimate Universe, presumably culminating with what will be the destruction of this universe and the merging of our world. I don't know.
Right.
But I get to hang out with Ultimate Rick Jones and the Silver Surfer, and then their version of Captain Marvel. And, you know, all the stuff that Fialkov's been doing over here in the Ultimate Corner has been pretty good. I think it's going to be unfortunate when they shut everything down. Again, that is speculation.
Right.
It's always fun to see the big giant scale of Galactus.
Yeah. And then I liked
drones.
It how they tore it right down into Rick Jones being inspired by Peter Parker.
Yeah.
You know, it all comes back to that part, and I thought
you see Peter Parker's house, and like they've set up like a memorial outside the house and the pictures and everything. It's very sad.
He'd been gone a long time, apparently.
Yeah.
Still is hungry though.
Green Arrow 24 is notable simply because they have introduced the Diggle character into the DC universe.
What is that? That's from the show, isn't it?
From the show.
TV show.
Okay.
So he joins Coulson and Chloe Sullivan and all those other people that have shown up now. So he is introduced into the world.
If I may.
Yes.
Speaking of Diggle.
Yes.
Thank you. Yep. I read this Captain America Living Legend number one, and I'm wondering.
Is this the one that never came out?
Is this the black Captain America white?
No. That was Loeb and Sale.
All right.
He was gonna do like Marvel Knights Captain America or something like that. Whatever.
Something like that.
Back when they had about four different weird imprints.
Yeah.
This was this sounds like the unproduced or the unpublished Captain America story that Diggle had.
It does. It was drawn by Adi Granov, which is pretty. He doesn't do a lot of interiors anymore. And because of that, like, it feels like this is movie Cap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this very much feels like this is like the untold chapter from the movies. And it's a fun little story dealing with sort of the space race and some fallout from a Russian cosmonaut. And
what era does it take place in?
There's a bit of it during World War II. There's a bit of it during the space race. And then there's a bit that's modern.
So does he wake up in the 60s?
No, the space race part happened. Basically, Cap saves a Russian's life during the war. That Russian goes on to be a cosmonaut in the 60s. And then there are repercussions in the modern world. It's good. I mean, if you like Adi Granov, there's not a lot of it out there. So get on it. And this has to be that story.
It's got to be. I'd be really surprised if it wasn't. So I didn't check it out, but it did occur to me when I saw what it was. So those are the books that we wanted to talk about. Now let's jump over to some audience questions. We've got a whole bunch here. So we will start with Monty. From Parts Unknown. Paul, is this just you writing?
No relation. No. Okay. It sounds like it is. I swear it's not me.
All right. Well, Monty says, if Heisenberg Walter White from Breaking Bad was a comic book fan, what would be his favorite superhero and villain? What current series would you recommend Heisenberg read? So Walter White, Heisenberg, was the main character in Breaking Bad that just ended last week, in case you
know. And we're not going to spoil anything. We're not going to say what happened. I'm just going to speak to the character that you see in, you know, like season one, I guess. And
I mean, it's so easy to just give him science books, right? Because he's a scientist. That seems...
Well, he loves science. I mean, he's...
He does love science.
That's a through line, and that never changes throughout the entire series. Spoiler alert, sorry. Like he Hank always Palmer, loves science.
Hank Pym. Hank Pym's probably a really good one for him. He flirts with the Edge.
Well, you know, you could say that the Ultron story is sort of a metaphor for what happened to him. You know, he starts off with good intentions, and it all spirals out of control into this thing that destroys everyone's lives.
Maybe Batman, because Batman never does lose that thread, even though he looks like he might, but is also is super genius capable. Mr. Terrific. You know what I mean? Like that kind of character.
Right.
The Flash, because I mean, all like the early Flash especially is all about solving science problems. That's what all of the rogues are, and Walt likes to solve things with science. How about, you know? But then, you know, so that's superheroes. There are some great science OGNs.
The villains, he's got I don't know if I go for science as much as someone who does bad things for the right, or what he thinks is the right reasons, right? So that's what he's doing.
Hydro Man. No, wait.
Stilt Man?
Not Hydro Man. What's the other one? The other Spider-Man villain?
Sandman?
Sandman. He's just trying to save his daughter.
Like
go.
From the movie, Sandman.
Isn't there a villain who has like a debilitating illness?
The Vulture was sick for a while.
Yeah, I think that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Dr. Octopus, I mean, was really
yes.
like...
Yes, and he's a scientist as well.
Jesse is Spider-Man. I would see that movie.
I wouldn't hold your breath.
You know, Manhattan Project.
Yeah, that's trying to avoid that. I mean, not that you shouldn't. It just seems too obvious.
But that's not hard science. And he wouldn't like it.
Yeah, it's speculative.
Yeah, Stephen. How about Stephen?
The Five Fists of Science by Matt Fraction.
There you go. Stephen Siegel's genius book. Is that just how Walt views himself as a genius?
I feel like he'd be a Dr. Doom or Lex Luthor type guy, you know? Like
Luthor.
Lex Luthor thinks he is doing he knows what's best for the people.
Well, we're talking about books that he would like, but yeah. For recommendations, what if we give him some therapy? Like what books would help him out?
I don't believe he would.
Like a Asterios Polyp about ego and pride.
Yeah.
He's in no position.
300 about hubris.
He's not going to read that.
There's a little bit of suspension of disbelief inherent in this question and him actually reading what we give to him.
Scalped?
I mean, like, the thing is, Gale would have offered to let him read some of his graphics.
Yes, Gale would have totally had these comics and he totally would have offered it to him awkwardly in the lab, and he would have been like, yeah, sure, Gale.
And he would have never picked them up and read them. Yeah. That's really the fact of the matter. Walter White, not going to read comics.
I think he read them when he was younger.
Probably.
I think he read them when he was in college. He was reading Marvel books in the 60s.
We know Jesse loves superheroes, or at least he opens up to Jane about it with Kangaman and the characters that he created and drew. I wrote a piece for Book Riot like before the previous season about like recommending books, not just comics, but books to the different characters. And I gave Jesse Understanding Comics because maybe get out of this business.
Well, the thing is, all this talk makes me sad thinking about when Walter beat Jesse to death in the finale. I mean, it was overly brutal.
That they made out before that.
Right. Well, it's a love-hate thing, you know? I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you. Kissing and punching and kissing and stabbing, you know?
Show got weird
at the end.
Show got weird.
Yeah.
Next!
Okay, Chris from the Big Rig. I just listened
is that
to
a
episode.
Place?
Is he on like an oil rig?
I just added that in. I just listened to episode 401 and was glad that you mentioned my email regarding Thanos' name. I'm sending a recording. Hope you're able to hear it. The reason I'm behind on your show is that I'm a truck driver and I sometimes forget to sync my phone. When I forget, I got a whole week to wait until I'm back home, able to sync it and get the new shows. Also, the reason I'm making such a fuss about this is that when the movie comes out, I hope they don't say his name wrong as well. As I mentioned last time, he's my favorite character, and I named my huge muscle-bulging psychotic killer chihuahua Thanos. I also feel you get enough pull and listeners to show them the right pronunciation to the name of this sick-ass character. So let's roll tape. This is how he says we should pronounce the big purple guy.
All because of Thanos. Thanos.
And that recording was from Silver Surfer, episode 6. And Thanos' name comes from the Greek personification of death, which is Thanatos, not Thanatos, which sounds more weak, Thanos instead of Thanos. Thanos sounds better. I hope you guys get to hear this. Okay, thanks. Love your show. Dates.
Now, I respect Chris's sending this in, and I respect his strong feelings on this. He clearly loves the character, but I've always said Thanos, and therefore it's always going to come out of my mouth as Thanos, just because it's been 30 years of reading comics.
It's really difficult to get Connor to not pronounce something the way that he wants to pronounce
it.
No,
I mean, it's like anything, you know. It's like
Martian Manhunter, I think we just recently worked on
you,
it.
When you live somewhere for a long time, they change a street name. You know, it's just, you know, there's the Triborough Bridge in New York.
Which sure, it's the RFK Bridge.
You know,
sure.
It's just like it's what you've done or known for decades, and you just have a hard time changing. Now, if the movie comes out and it's everywhere and people are talking about it, and, you know, it may help, but for now, my brain's going to go to Thanos.
Well, here's the thing. If it's based on a Greek god pronunciation, who knows how they actually said it? And I bet there were people who said those names differently in Greece or whatever. The authority on it for me, as far as I'm concerned, would be if we were to find out what Jim Starlin thought. Mm-hmm. And he would be able to lay the smack down. Anything that comes after that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That would be the thing.
I respect that, you know, you go into the roots of it and... Yeah, Thanatos and stuff like that instead of Thanos. I think Thanos sounds stronger to me just because it has a hard A in it. Yeah. But I'll respect that. And, you know, I'm not called to say it out loud all that often. So I hope I'm not ruining it for Chris and anyone else.
The thing about Thanos is, Josh, he doesn't like, you know, the way you walk your dog.
He's a Thanos. You know, that sounds right if you say it like that.
Yeah.
I lived in a very Greek neighborhood. And I got to say, if I was talking like them, I would go with Thanos.
Thanos.
Yeah. It makes a point.
I love that he named his dog after the character.
He doesn't want to walk.
I love that there's a chihuahua out there that is named Thanos. It's wonderful. Yeah.
And a lot more people are going to get that joke eventually.
Yeah.
Because right now, it's a low audience.
I just rewatched The Avengers a couple, like last week, and I really, A, enjoyed it, and B, was just really excited to see more Thanos.
So do we think that's going to be Avengers 3?
I was going to be Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, oh yeah, next. I mean, but like he's going to be like off in the shadows still. I think they're still going to be.
I don't know. I just enjoyed it and want to see more. That's my point.
I'm excited too.
Brian from San Antonio, Texas says, after devouring A Song of Fire and Ice, that was two direct articles in a row. After devouring the A Song of Fire and Ice books a few months back, I've noticed my life has a distinct lack of fantasy comics. I know that there were a few noticeable examples in recent years, like Mike Carey's Lucifer, Jason Aaron's Thor, and James Soko's underrated Orcstain. Beyond those few titles, every fantasy comic that I can think of is usually some form of urban fantasy. So where can a guy go to scratch the epic fantasy itch while still reading a book with pretty pictures and word balloons? Balloons.
Mouse Guard.
Cerebus. Read Cerebus. It'll take you forever.
The thing is, like, if you think, like, straight up epic fantasy,
yeah.
I don't think is that typical...
It's not a popular genre comics right now.
It's more for younger readers. There's so stuff like Mouse Guard and Spera from Archaea by Josh Tierney and a whole bunch of different artists. It's a web comic, and then they've put them. There's two hardcovers out, and I really recommend those. And it's two female characters, and it's two different, like the sort of Disney princess version, and then the other princess who is the more like the traditional knight male kind of role. And it's all different kinds of artists. I would recommend that. I miss Orcstain. Love that book.
I wouldn't say it's underrated. It was under.
It was very highly rated in the critical community. It just wasn't very purchased in the fan community.
Yeah.
So how are we defining fantasy?
It's a
like Game of Thrones kind of fantasy, like castles and knights and stuff, and
Cerebus.
Not Cerebus, sure.
There's 25 super giant volumes of it. It'll take you a long time to read.
There's 300 issues of that, yeah. And that's, I mean, it went all over the place, but that's what it was, you know, because there was nothing else that existed like that. And you go back and look for shorter examples if you wanted to look up Frazetta books, you know, it's what he did. Or if you wanted to look up, there's no shortage of Conan comics from various eras.
Was it called Conan, the new Conan book?
Get that big Dark Horse collection that's coming out this Christmas. It's like 1,200 pages or something like that.
But, you know, the thing about, you know, the George R. R. Martin books is they're a little bit of a hybrid, you know, in terms of, you know, they've got the swords and dragons and things like that, but there's also a massive soap opera element to it. And I don't know if those
things... That's true, but I think he's just saying he doesn't want urban fantasy, which is more like the Dresden Files and like Constantine would kind of fit in there.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not just after sorcery, he's after...
Medieval,
I think that's what he's asking for.
There's not a big chunk, though, outside of those things we've talked about. There's things, you know, there's the all-ages version with Scott Chandler's Three Thieves. That's something you could look into.
There's also, well, you'd think that with the popularity of the books and TV shows, there would be more exploration of that genre, but there really isn't.
We'll be getting, you know what, you'd think there'd be more dragon stuff, but...
There is a book from I just went on my shelves. Dark Horse Dragon Arrow.
That's not a real book.
Dragon Arrow.
That's a real book.
There is straight up an orc with a broad axe on the front of this book, and there's a guy with a sword, and it's by Luca Enoch Stefano Vietti. This is obviously something that was sent to me, and I never actually read, but it looks pretty good, and I think I might read it now. How about Farfid and the Grey Mouser? The Fritz Lieber story, which was adapted to comics by Howard Chaykin and Mike Mignola.
Ooh.
I read that a long time ago. I don't remember anything about it.
It's some more like early Mignola.
Fafhrd.
And the Grey Mouser. It's about thieves. And there's one big dude and one littler dude. And there's an octopus on the front.
Would you recommend Watchmen?
I mean, yes, in a general sense.
Oh, okay.
I'm not answering that question.
Just making sure you're still... I'm just looking at my shelf trying to think, and there's really not...
They just put out a book from Vertigo. There's a number one we didn't talk about it. Hinterkins by Ian Edgington and Francesco Trafogli. And it is a dystopian book, but when it's not about the end of the world. It's about the end of the human race, and now the old fairy folk have returned. So
it's
that,
specifically urban, though. It's in New York City.
Yeah, but it's not...
You literally can't get more urban.
I Am Legend, but with trolls.
There still might be something in there for him. I don't know.
Listen, you can't find exactly the Game of Thrones thing, which is why it's Game of Thrones, even though that's not...
There are Game of Thrones comics.
We just read the books, though.
The Hedge Knight.
Yeah. Would you stretch to, like, Northlanders? I mean, it's not fantasy, but it's...
I mean, it depends on what you want, but...
swords and people with axes fighting and...
I mean, the best parts the best part of the Barton stuff is
the fucking
non-magic stuff. Well, that's in the show. Oh, if okay. I was talking about the books.
You like the incest.
All right.
You know, obviously, who does? Listen, we all get our thrills.
Listen, they're two attractive people. What are you going to do?
Do you
they're
have
very
any
blonde.
Sisters?
Yeah, sort of.
Is there like a V.C. Andrews thing going on up in the attic? No?
I don't. You're making a lot of literary references I can't keep up with anymore.
I'm sorry.
And I think you're just showing off.
I am.
And I want you to know that nobody out there listening knows what you're talking about.
You have access to Wikipedia, man.
I would be typing in stuff the whole time.
She doesn't know what we're talking about anymore. What part of the show are we on?
So tired.
So those are
the new tired is the new hot.
So Brian, those are the suggestions. We had a lot of them in there. I don't think there's anything exactly what you're looking for currently being published. I could be wrong. If you know something that we don't know about. Please go to the comment section.
I'm sure there's
let us know in the comments because I'd like to read some.
Not necessarily
stuff.
You, Brian, since you would know, you wouldn't need to write the answer. But question, but if you know, listener out there, go to the comment section. Tell us what's being produced in fantasy, non-urban fantasy right now, which means non-New York.
Epic fantasy.
Let us
know. That's post-New York.
There's no such thing as post-New York.
In New York, they were walking between cars.
The cars didn't work.
In Central Park. It's still an obstacle. They went to the bridge.
Which bridge, Josh? Triborough?
I think they called it the Queensborough Bridge. Like the 59th Street.
Oh, that's
bridge.
The Ed Koch Bridge now. See, they've all got new names, but no one calls them that.
Wait, they changed that one?
Yes, it's the Ed Koch Bridge.
That has three names now?
Exactly.
They got bows and arrows and stuff.
And still the Kosciusko stands. A monument to modern
inefficiency. Awful. Oh God!
I don't think people like it when we get really regional.
I don't give a fuck. I drove on that bridge four times a day at one point for many years.
Connor lived. I shit you not. Connor lived between 7 and 8 miles away from me, and there were times where it took me 3 hours to drive to or from him to where I lived. 3 hours.
It's not good urban planning. Who we got to blame for that, Moses? Robert Moses?
Bone is fantasy.
Bone is fantasy.
Yeah, Bone is a great example.
See, we knew if Josh and I vamped for long enough, Paul, you would find another answer.
Hinterkin still counts. A unicorn gets its head blown off in this book.
But is it in an urban setting?
Spoiler.
Yes.
Contact at iFanboy.com is where you write us. 888-FANBOYS-326-2697 is where you call us to get
Elf
your
Quest.
Questions on the show.
You know what? We are no experts on this. None of us, you know, I'm
fantasy,
sure there are books.
Fantasy's not a huge
genre. I'm Googling shit right now.
For,
I'm just...
That's
just
why we're
trying to be
show.
Helpful.
So we're going to write us and we'll Google some shit.
So Grimm's Fairy Tales.
We ordered you a pizza?
All right, enough. All right, so we got a couple of shows, other shows that came out this week. Just mentioned last time, Paul and I did an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show that's still on there, still relevant. There's only been a couple of episodes. Check it out. I enjoyed the second episode much more than I enjoyed the first episode.
As did I.
Paul finally got to put out his Booksplode show. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we have a Booksplode / Talksplode with Scott Snyder talking about Batman Year 100 and how it influences his work and continues to influence his work on Batman Zero Year. So that's fun.
And Fuzzy Typewriter, you wrapped up your Breaking Bad recap.
Not yet.
Not yet.
We're doing an epilogue show.
How long can we squeeze the juice out of this lemon?
I have one more. And I did one on the finale, and David Ocampo and my friend Jay Stringer did their own one. And so there's a lot of Breaking Bad. There's a lot to talk about. This is a monumental, you know, thing.
Is this your favorite show of all time?
I think it's the most consistent of my favorite shows. Like, I love West Wing, but I can't say that West Wing sticks the landing entirely, even though it gets good by the end.
I'm almost out of season 5. It's just the forest for the trees, man.
The Wire doesn't stick the landing. You know, like season 5 is rough. So
that's not their fault. They lost 3 episodes. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, the final episode of The Wire is really good, though.
No, their final season montage is always fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. But
I think if they'd had those 3 other episodes in that season, then you wouldn't be saying that. I think it was really difficult to watch everything that McNulty did.
I'm not saying that it's horrible. I'm just saying that it's
now?
Not. Okay.
It's fine. I need to get it out. Because on anybody else's scale, that's a bunch of great TV. But just it came after season 4, which is, along with Justified season 2, the finest season of television ever produced.
Yes. Make the noise that Snoop makes.
Wait. Oh.
It creeps you out. Yerp.
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 Yerp. Yep, yep. I was on a podcast.
Oh, yes, you were.
I was on the Nerd Geek Dork podcast. I've been meaning to talk to them about that name, too.
You made that up.
No. We talked about Jaws, and we talked about Jaws with so many people in for so long that they had to make it into 2 episodes. So,
it's your first time watching it?
Part 1 came out this week. I listened to it this week. It was very enjoyable. Josh dominates the conversation, as Josh tends to do. No matter how many people are in that podcast, which I think there were 10. I'm not quite sure.
It was 5.
Josh dominated.
One guy dropped off.
I learned on Facebook this week in trivia that Cabot Cove, the bay, is actually the recreation of Amityville for the Jaws ride.
Amity, as you know, means friendship.
Anyway, Josh, listen to Josh talk about Jaws. That was a really interesting, entertaining discussion. Yeah. I look forward to part 2 next week. Listen to Paul talk about Breaking Bad and Fuzzy Typewriter. Listen to Paul and Scott Snyder talk about Batman Year 1 on the Booksplode. Listen to me and
Year
Paul
100.
Talk about Year 100, whatever. Listen to Paul and I talk about Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
You were off by 99 years, so I just...
In the global sense, in the historical sense, what is that word I can't think of?
I don't know. We're so tired. I used to have
geological
access.
Sense. In the geological sense, I can't access my brain
anymore.
That
might be true.
It doesn't really mean much, 99 years. Those are the shows. It
means a lot to us while we're here.
Head over to iFanboy.com to comment on this show. Find all those shows we just mentioned, well, the ones anyway that we produce, as well as follow us on Twitter.com/iFanboy, Facebook.com/iFanboy. That is more important now since we're going to be tweeting out the pics and Facebooking the pics as they are made. So you'll get a sense of how long it's taking us now to make the pick of the week.
Yeah. I'm not hurrying for you, though.
No. So go do those things.
You could, you know when there are like words in your head and you want to access them and you just
can't do it.
I hate it.
I'm getting dumber by the moment.
Yeah. And dumber. You can email at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Did you follow that? I said it real fast.
I did, but I'm biased because I'm used to it.
Concerns. Topics. Again, and I haven't mentioned this for a while. 800 fanboys is a whole other experience.
All right, it is. I wonder if it still is.
I bet it is. I don't know. Do they still have phone sex? Is that a thing?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so. I don't know. I saw a movie about it recently.
Girl 6?
No, it was...
John Locke used it.
All right.
Before...
Yeah, but
Island.
That was
a while ago.
Yeah.
It's like 2005.
Listen, Paul, finish it up.
If you dig us, write us a review on iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us, introduce your mom to podcasts, spread it all around.
Ew.
All around.
This show's weird.
It is
weird.
Look,
there's no denying it. We can only apologize.
I'm not sorry.
It got weird. It got weird early and just stayed weird the whole time.
They're sick. They want it.
Jesus.
They keep tuning in. You freaks.
You might not like it, but you take it every time.
Anyway, you know, sometimes the show will get weird. That's just the way it goes.
It's been a long week.
That's it for this week. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Y'all know my name. How I earn a living.
Is it sharkin?
Sharkin. Talking about going down the pond, catching bluegills, Tommy Cox.
Tommy Cods?
Cox.
No, it's not.
Tommy Cox.
No, it's not. It's Tommy Cods.
You might be right, but I don't care.
He says Cox.
No, he doesn't.
That whole scene is the most ridiculous scene in the movie. Wait, no, not that one. The one when he's in his cabin.
Yes.
Man, that one documentary told us all about Netley. It was great.
I'm Googling Tommy Cods.
I think Paul's right.
Oh, it is a Tommy Cod.
Because a cod is a fish. Cox, not a fish.
For 35 years, I've been saying Tommy Cox.
Yeah, I was, and also, you know, like he's jabbering semen nonsense.
somebody call in with the pronunciation of Tommy Cods.
Siemens nonsense.
Also, if you Google Tommy Cox,
I think that's a Stephen King novel. Tommy Cockers.
Goodbye, everybody. You're so damn hard to please. We gotta kill this witch. You're from the 70s.